Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are starting our special Death Scribe 2015 episode. This is a fun event that I've enjoyed keeping my eye on the past few years, and this year I decided, you know what, I'm going all out, because this is a fun project, a worthy project, more people need to know about it, and if people are in the Chicago area, they can have something to do on Monday, December 7th, rather than stay inside and freeze. So I have with me right now Josh Zagorin. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
Now, tell
how do you, how is?
We are fine. Now, tell everybody what you actually do, because you're affiliated with Wildclaw Theater Group, the instigators behind the Death Scribe radio plays, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm the new artistic director of Wildclaw Theater. I've been, it's only been a few months. The company's been around for 8 years, since 2007. We've gone through two changes in management over the years, and this is the third regime, as it were. And I'm basically in charge of picking the season, of the creative teams, and just the general creative direction that the company is going to move in. So if anything, I don't know, the navigator on the ship,
okay,
I think is a good way of putting it. And then as far as Death Scribe goes, I'm picking the directors, the judges, and when it comes to the scripts, I was part of the reading team, but in the final wave this year. Every year we do two waves. We have our literary manager, Chris Walsh, and our assistant literary manager, Scott Barsotti, who basically handles the blind and the first round, and he picks a team from the company to read the initial scripts, because we get over 100 each year. We whittle it down to 18, and then we have a big group meeting where we all get together called the Culling, and it's probably our favorite time of the year. And we all get together and argue for our favorites until we pick our five finalists. it's almost like a cult meeting at night. We all get together and hash out who's going to be our combatants this year.
Excellent. Yeah, the competition, the screenplay or radio play competition, I think was how I first, my attention first got grabbed. I'm like, they're having a radio play competition where they actually perform the plays of the finalists, and the writer of the winning performance gets a bloody axe. That is just the coolest thing I've ever heard.
it's coveted, the bloody axe, amongst the people. It's a legendary prize, and it's a real axe. And our Charlie Athanas, who's our associate, he's our marketing director, artistic director. He's in charge of the branding. We have Krista D'Agostino, who's our marketing director. Charlie Athanas is in charge of making sure that the brand fits the mold, and then the mold fits the brand. But he's the one that builds the axe every year. He goes and he buys an axe and carves the year into it, bloodies it up, dulls it, of course, because we're not monsters. And, the winning playwright gets to take that home.
Nice.
And display it proudly for all to see.
So tell us about how the directors are selected.
Every year it's a little different. Our goal was to have all women directors this year. We are I don't want to use the word progressive, because I don't think it should be progressive. I think that if anything, it should be basic. But we've always been about strong female characters, strong female leads, parts for women, strong creative opportunities for women. And I figured that the best thing to do would be to put them in the driver's seat, just in general. And so when we have Death Scribe, have the opportunity for new voices, new playwrights, I think that was the goal, was to make sure that we set an example. And I think we have. We have five very strong women. We've never worked with before, save our returning champion. We've got our reigning champion, Sarah Savini. She's with the Factory Theater. She's back to, you know, try to save the competition and for round two, hold on to her title. We'll see how she does. I know she's been very excited to get back in the ring. We have Brian Pouch, who works with Aqua Theater and the International Voices Project. That's Scandinavian. The Aqua Theater is a Scandinavian. It's the Norwegian, Danish, Swedish playwrights, and they do contemporary translations of these. And very exciting, very interesting. Never Ibsen, you know, but always very contemporary and dark. Lovely dark stories that they, but funny, which is, I think, very Scandinavian. We have Ellie Green, who's in this year. She's, I might add that Brian and Ellie and all of the ladies outside of Sarah have never, of course, this awesome, bringing some fresh blood. We have Ellie Green. She's with Straw Dog, Trapdoor, Sideshow, Stage Left. She's done shows with all of these companies. She just did a production of After Miss Julie that won all the awards and lauded, and I hope she's listening. She is blushing profusely, but she's back. She's here for the first time. Never worked with horror before. She was initially skeptical, and I believe we've charmed her greatly, and she's doing an amazing job.
Awesome.
We have Melanie Keller is back. Is here. I keep saying back. It's because a lot of these directors are so ingrained in the community. Always worked with them before, but this is actually their first time, except for Sarah, as I said. Melanie Keller, she's a First Folio Signal Ensemble. She did a production of a play called The Drowned Girls that just critically acclaimed in the city. And then we have Lee Barrett, who's been a friend of the company for years, but has yet to dive in, and now she's here. And she works with the Babes with Blades, the infamous and famous for all the wonderful right reasons, Babes with Blades. And, and she's more than excited. They all are, actually. And it's going to be wonderful to see the competition unfold and see what scares them. And I think that was part of the draw for that, is that they don't get the opportunity very often to do horror, to play in that world. And it's always nice to have them come in and see what makes them afraid, what scares them, where does the nightmare come from with them. So I'm always interested to see where people go when told to scare you, you know. When somebody says, hey, you know, make me laugh, people will tell you a joke. When somebody says, hey, make me cry, they'll tell you a bad story that hits deep. But when you say, scare me, I feel like the knee-jerk reaction is just to say something very loud and quick when you least expect it, but then you really get into it and you see what really freaks people out. I think that's the allure, the intoxicating factor when it comes to doing horror.
Awesome.
Is what really scares you, you know, because we all get scared.
Yeah.
And don't like to talk about it, which I think is interesting because we all do it, you know. So I'm interested to see what freaks these ladies out. I don't have enough. Go on. Sorry.
That's okay. We have interviews with all the writers and directors coming up later in the show. But yeah, Sarah was very eager. She she was very proud of the fact that she dethroned the previous reigning champion and is looking forward to maybe doing her own repeat or three-peat. And I'm really, really happy that you found five women directors who really, really not only enjoy horror, but grasp all the nuances that good horror can provide. So thank you.
The thing is, I thought a lot of them have never worked in the genre, which I thought was really cool that they were so eager to attempt it. All of them love the horror genre, but had never really had the opportunity to dive in on that. And I think that was part of the allure for them. and the fear, but that's what we deal in. So I think that worked out nicely. One of them actually reached out to me about the piece they were given and said that they were, that the piece really freaked them out. And I said, good, that's good. Welcome to that muscle that you can flex.
Yeah.
And having the opportunity to really explore fear, I think, was intriguing for a lot of them, because it's often not the focus. Usually with fear and in drama especially, you're just dealing with the human experience as a whole. With horror, you're dealing with the fight or flight feel. You're dealing with the feeling of dread, of doom, of impending danger. You have moments of terror where you're frozen and you have to think, but you can't. All of these things are things that we experience as people, and not too often do we really just revel in it. And I think that this is the best way to come to grips with that muscle, that feeling that we get, that horror, that feeling of helplessness. And I think the best way to do it is to flex that muscle and really just get used to it. And that's one of the reasons why I love horror. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're very intrigued about exploring the genre.
Yeah,
it's useful.
Yeah,
you know?
Reading some of these, I think I know which one was the one that freaked her out, because it gave me the when I was reading it.
Oh, good. Good. I mean, that's what we peddle in, so it's nice to know that it's effective.
Oh, that one, the sound effects added to that one would I would have chills running up and down my back in a heartbeat with that one. I really can't wait to hear the finished performance of that. So I know you guys do a podcast for the Death Scribe plays, right?
We are in the midst of restructuring that. We have a bunch of old shows that we've lost track of, and we're in the process of making sure we get them all taken care of and put in a locked hard drive. and then we're going to start releasing them again. The original podcast was called the Blood Radio Podcast, and as of now, that's what I'd like to continue calling it. But it was not a number one priority last year, and it just kind of got lost in the shuffle. And now with the changeover and everybody trying some new things, I think that's something I want to focus on for next year. So short answer, yes. Long answer, previously what I said.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about the other horror productions Wild Claw does during the year.
We have one main stage show a year for now. The goal is to get up to two and three in the next couple of years. We usually do an adaptation or an original piece, but never remounts. We've only done one remount that I know of, and that was The Revenants by Scott Barsotti, who's sort of, as I said, he's our associate literary manager. Previously was literary manager, but he since is raising a family, and he had to move to a different area in the company. But yeah, we remounted his show, The Revenants. It's a zombie, I'm going to say, relationship story. It was four people trapped in a basement. Two of them get bit, become zombies. Two of them are their spouses and don't want to put them down, so they chain them to a wall and decide what to do with them. And then the trappings of human experience start to get in the way, and then it becomes a bizarre love square, I want to say. And then it devoids into all kinds of chaos and despair. I got to do the remount last year. I was the one guy that didn't become a zombie, and it's never the fun job, because you have to watch everybody change. And but yeah, that's our first remount with that. But usually we do original works and adaptations of classics. let's see, we did one show that was called Carmilla, which I think is one of our more popular shows.
It is a yes, that's a classic.
Based on the classic, and that was a spectacle piece. It was very Hammer film, very lush kind of Technicolor kind of production with lots of beautiful costumes, and it was a three-tiered set, awesome lighting effects, and I mean, we're always very design-heavy, but this one just seemed to really play to our strengths, and it owned up to the gothic horror genre. But well, we kind of run the gamut. We've done Clive Barker's In the Flesh and also The Life of Death, and that's completely different shows. We did Legion, which was the sequel to The Exorcist, the original novel, and that was like a very new, kind of dark, intimate detective story. But yeah, like I said, we run the gamut between going full-on spectacle costume drama to shadowy detective story. So, you know, you name it, we've tried it. I don't think we've done a musical yet. Definitely something we haven't done.
Musical horror. There's two big ones out there I can think of. Anything else would have to be new.
Oh, yes. I don't know if that's the direction we want to take just yet, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Who knows what the future holds. but yeah, this year we're still looking for a script for next year because we're very picky, and that's how I prefer to keep it. And we will find one, and then when we do, it'll either be an adaptation. I think we have one or two in-house scripts that we've seen, and a couple from outside the fold, but we'll see. I'm always interested in what's going to happen the next year. I'd like to start thinking two or three years out now, and because we get all kinds that come in, which is always lovely to see, you know. It's always awesome.
Well, you know who to call when you have your selection for next year, so I can help tell people to keep an eye out and come see it when it's ready.
Oh yeah, we'll be on top of that. You'll hear from us. No problem. We're also very big about talking up the writers and directors that we bring in as well. So, which is something that I love about this company. We don't single out specific elements. We try to hit all of them, and all of our designers get the full treatment, the full shout out. Because, like I said, we're a design heavy company. We focus mainly on that, which I think is very indicative of doing horror just in general, because there, you know, it's always more fun with a little bit of blood and a little bit of sounds that are loud bumps and thumps and things. So we really focus in on that. But yeah, I'm excited to see as well what's going to happen next year.
Cool.
And hopefully it's something no one's ever seen before, which is something I'm always interested in making sure is what happens.
As long as everybody's having fun, right?
Oh, and you can't not, you know? Like, when your season consists of zombies and a vampire love story and a Cthulhu-esque, we did a Shadow over Innsmouth, we have a Shoggoth in that, we had Lovecraftian Beasts. If you're not having fun, I don't know what more you want, really. Like, I don't know what you're missing if this isn't fun for you. And so it's never not a good time.
Awesome.
For sure.
Well, everybody can check out Death Scribe 2015 if you're in the Chicago area. Once they have the podcast up with the performances, I will be the first to tell everybody to go check it out. I know that. If you're in Chicago, Monday, December 7th at the main stage is where you can go. Are you guys sold out yet?
We're getting there. If you have the time, jump online and find your tickets now.
Well, like I said, Death Scribe 2015, Chicago, the main stage, December 7th. Everybody stay tuned. Everybody check it out if you're in the Chicago area. Thank you for your time today, Josh.
Well, thank you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guests right now are the writers and director of Back in Baby's Arms, which is one of the winning scripts for Death Scribe 2015. We have the writer Travis Williams and the director Bree Ann Pouch. And I will say this. I was very entertained by the script for Back in Baby's Arms.
That's great.
How did you come up with that idea? I know you've got a werewolf thing going on, but what particularly about that did attracted you?
Well, it initially didn't start off as a werewolf story. I've been sitting on this script in these characters for, I'd say, probably about a little over a year now. It always started off with Ricky and Carly and then Baby in the script. The werewolf thing kind of came about. I'm a huge fan of horror comic books, and I just happened to be reading a slew of them when the submission policy or the submission was opened up again. And I thought, well, I really think that there's something here in this story. So I just revisited it, and then as I was rereading it, I found this twist, and I was like, all right, so I'll start from the very beginning and rewrite the whole thing, and then that's how it came about.
Now, Bree, were you assigned this story to direct, or did you pick it?
I picked it. The way that Death Scribe works is they send out all of the scripts to all of the directors, and then the directors put in kind of in order their favorites. And I was just very drawn to this script. This was my top choice script. So I can confidently say that I chose it.
What about the story or the characters grabbed you and said, this is the one I have to do?
Well, I liked it because it wasn't just like a straightforward bad guy, good guy story. There's a lot of layers of like who the monster is. Mm-hmm. You know, which I really like. And it was interesting to hear Travis talk about how the story originated, because I really love that Carly and Ricky are the heart of the story. Mm-hmm. And they're your villains, but they're also in a way victims too. And so I just really like the complexity of that, and how Travis has allowed these two characters that they're the bad guys to be so open to sympathy from the audience. So I'm excited to work on that.
Now, do you have any, I guess, secrets you can divulge now about how you plan to approach directing this?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a pretty process-open director, so a lot of things I think will come out of working with the actors when they get into the room with me, but I really want to focus on the Carly-Ricky relationship and what their goals are, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to build a family, and I think the more sympathy the audience has for them and the more they understand their motives, the better and more complex the horror in the story will be. So that's kind of my focus.
So you're more focused on how the love story turns into horror than actually the horror.
Yeah, I think that's what throws the horror into relief. I'm trying to be careful because I don't want to spoil the twist. So I'm sorry if I'm being a little cagey. I don't want to spoil Travis's story. But I think the more the audience relates to Carly and Ricky and feels not necessarily empathy with them, but sympathy for where they come from and where they're trying to go together, the sharper and more horrific the twist and the end will be.
Excellent. Well, we will leave all of the surprises intact. My next series of questions is about what attracts you both to writing and directing stage plays. Travis?
Well, for me, I kind of jump all over the board. I started writing like little short stories when I was a kid and scared the crap out of my mom with one. And I had to pass it off that it was an Edgar Allan Poe story because she thought something was wrong with me. And I was like, it was Edgar Allan Poe. And then I kind of realized the power of writing through that. And my mom's a cop too. So it was like to really scare the crap out of her that's really powerful. So, but I kind of jump all over the board. I mean, I fell in love with stage acting when I was a kid in school, and it wasn't until college that I was, you know, introduced to the works of like Shepard and Beckett and, you know, all these other great writers that I was like, okay, you know, I want to start writing plays. And then when I moved to Chicago, you know, I was continuing writing plays, and then I found out about this Death Scribe thing, and I was like, well, I want to write radio plays. And then it went from that to writing comic book scripts, and now it's going to writing for screen now too. So I kind of like to jump all over the board. If I have a story in mind and I think that a certain medium is better suited for that, that's what I'll write for.
Now, do you do stage acting as well, or just the writing?
Yeah, no, I do. I do stage acting. I originally moved to Chicago to do acting, period, across the board. And I've been fortunate enough to be involved with a show for the last 3.5 years now that will be closing here very soon here in town called Million Dollar Quartet. And I've been understudy for that role of Johnny Cash and Sam Phillips for 3.5 years now. So it's been pretty crazy.
Wow. Now, Bree, so what are your preferences for directing plays?
I sort of got as an actor, and several years ago kind of transitioned into directing, but I have, since I was a little kid, been really thrilled by the experience of live theater and by being in the room with the performers as an audience member. And then once I started performing, being in the room with the audience, there's something immediate about that,
mm-hmm.
and risky, and I just love being a part of something like that that involves everybody in the room, whether you're an audience member or a performer. And what really attracts me to directing is being able to be kind of a part of all of the pieces of it. I love working with writers. I love working with designers, and really being a part of pulling together, you know, what can turn into a moment that impacts people emotionally, intellectually, and in the moment where you can be sitting in the room with them and feel it happen. I mean, that's the most rewarding thing in the world for me. I love it. So that's why I like to do theater. I like to direct all sorts of plays. So I don't think I have a favorite type. This is my first experience with horror, and I've been pretty excited about finding what interests me about the genre. So that's been a lot of fun.
Okay, so this is your first Death Scribe.
This is my first Death Scribe, and it's my first real horror play.
Awesome. So I know one of this year's directors is actually the returning champion from last year. So the fact that there's a competition between the directors now that the writing competition is complete, I find that fascinating about Death Scribe, and can't wait to talk more about it with Josh. So,
well, I think Josh will tell you. It's my impression anyway, from what I know of Death Scribe, that the winner that's announced at the end of the night is the writer. I think the directors are there, kind of like, you know, pulling for their writer and trying to make sure that they're showcased in the best light.
Good luck to both of you. Like I said, I really enjoyed Back in Baby's Arms, and I hope the audience, both at the performance that night and later on, if they get to hear the recording of it, also enjoys it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, Travis Williams, Brian Pausch for Back in Baby's Arms, one of the participants in DeathScribe 2015. We will have more about DeathScribe and the other plays to be performed there right after this. We're back with more Slice of Sci-Fi, and my guests now are Axel Arth and Lee Barrett, the writer and director of another segment being put on, DeathScribe 2015. The play that Axel wrote is called Too Many Teeth. And I would just like to welcome you guys to the show.
Thank you.
And Axel, tell us, without getting any spoilerific hints away, where Too Many Teeth came from and why you chose to tell the story as a stage play.
Well, I tend to write from images, but it was something that it was a couple images that came together, things that I felt were adequately creepy, things that were the right kind of unsettling. The idea of a traveling salesman, the idea of someone rolling into town who you have no real reason to trust, but they've got a big smile and a friendly handshake and definitely something to sell. That, and it's a little bit about, not quite body horror, it's very hard to do body horror in a radio format, but it's changing things. It's that kind of uncontrollable primal change that ends up coming with it. As far as why to tell it in a theatrical format, it's my favorite way to get horror. Reading it is something I haven't gotten too far into, but as far as watching it, as far as the old Tales from the Crypt serials I've raised on Twilight Zone, that kind of episodic, where something can happen and the world can shift completely and there can be major changes, but the ending is still the ending. That you can still tell a complete story and you can still wrap it up, but you still get all of the tools and all of the bag of tricks to be able to bring it all together. And why I'm really excited for DeathScribe's radio format is there are a lot of things you can do with radio that it is a lot harder to pull off on stage. That there are sound effects and there's Foley work and there's ways that you can imply some pretty grisly things or some pretty intense things without having to get overly gory or even without having to worry about how it's going to work or how you can suspend that disbelief or get the special effects for it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing I've always been thrilled about with the short story format that a lot of the better horror comes in to play. Most of those old Outer Limits and Twilight Zones and Tales from the Crypt and even newer things like Dead Man's Gun and The Hitchhiker, some of those stories I remember decades later, and I remember them better than your average horror movie that's come out in the past 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So, Lee, what is your approach to directing something that's short and really nowhere near sweet?
I think it's plenty sweet. Really, the radio format and the way that the DeathScribe format works is we get to really play with, obviously we're playing with the audience's imagination, with the sounds and the voices. It's a real great chance for actors to do some really big vocal choices. And the visual aspect that the people who are in the theater are going to get to enjoy. I mean, there's just something about seeing the behind the scenes and still being able to close your eyes and really visualize what we're trying to put into the imagination of the house. And visually, I can't help but think visually, because whenever I am listening to a piece of music or a radio play or a story being told on audio, you can't help but go there visually. And I keep thinking of the old I don't know if you ever read the old EC comic books.
Oh wow, yeah, long time ago.
Yeah, and that at the same time they were also doing the original Mad Magazine was in a comic book format and was really heavily influenced by the EC horror side of it as well. If you look at some of the old Mad comic books, they had all of these very big, again, not overly gory, but they could do things with a written sound effect or with a what's just outside of the panel using somebody's expression. So I really am picking those up again and trying to say, especially with something called Too Many Teeth, and we do have a character who's got that feature. It's that big, broad stroke comic book feel is really appealing to me.
And I think that's, I mean, one of the things that draws me the most to the format is talking about that feeling of what's just outside of the panel, of being able to see someone's reaction and fill in the blank yourself. But mm-hmm. I feel that the radio format really lends itself to that. That you get a lot of space for the audience to be able to fill in what they're seeing and to be able to basically to think of what scares them the most and to be able to meet it halfway with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I personally believe the best horror comes from, where you hint at something and there's a psychological pull where that person fills in the blanks themselves and actually scares themselves more than anything you could actually put on the screen for them.
Absolutely.
And it's just such a visceral, it's a delicious pleasure and release also. When you get to the end, you're like, oh my goodness, or oh wow, they got away, or somewhere in between. And you just don't get that feeling with the newer slasher splatterpunk horror movies, at least I don't. I mean, to me, that's boring.
No, I'm absolutely on board with it, but I wasn't into horror for the longest time because the people around me who really liked it were into the gruesome slasher type. And it wasn't until recently when a couple friends started introducing me to not necessarily thinkers, but the ones that have more substance. But it's really hard to be scary if it's just gore and loud noises. And when you get to the slow burn, when you get to the thinking about what's going on, to like the things in the shadows, is when the horror really starts creeping up on you.
And at the same time, with this play especially, there's this twisted feel that brings you toward humor at the same time, which also really attracts me to this piece.
Now, Lee, did you select this play, or were you assigned it?
Yes and no. Okay. The directors, well, they had a panel of directors and they had a list of plays. We all put down a list of plays that we were interested in. So we all chose three and then we were assigned. So it's kind of a combination.
Okay. Okay. What drew you to put this one in your top three?
Mostly the sense of humor. I really enjoy the relationships that have been drawn between, and see, I can't really talk too much about it, but there's all these people who are just meeting for the first time or who don't know each other at all, and we have maybe one or two relationships that are established, but I think in a very short amount of time, Axel does a really good job establishing those relationships. And we're going to have a lot of fun with this cast, too, because we got who could pull that off.
Well, I know I, for one, am looking forward to hearing the recordings of the productions once they're done. I was promised there'd be a podcast, and if I don't get one, I'm traveling to Chicago and knocking on someone's door. But yes, without getting too spoilery, we want to leave that surprise for everybody. But thank you for your time today, Axel and Lee.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much.
I had a good time.
Oh, thank you. For everyone who's in the Chicago area, if you happen to be bored on December 7th, check out the Wildclaw Theater Group's performance of Death Scribe 2015. We will have, as always, links to that where you can check it out. If you're in the Chicagoland area and can get there, I'm jealous officially. And I want to report.
You got it.
Thank you again. And we will be right back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, this is Will Wheaton from Radio Free Burrito and WillWheaton.net. You are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi, one of five podcasts that I regularly listen to because I'm a judgmental bastard.
Hello and hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guests right now are Eric Marlin and Melanie Keller, the writer and director of yet another entry into DeathScribe 2015 called Bad Things Happen Here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Bad Things Happen Here seems like a very interesting story, the way it's structured, the way it's broken down. Eric, tell us how, I'm going to try to stay unspoilery for people who are going to be attending DeathScribe and for people who will be listening to the recordings of the stage plays later. Tell us how the structure of having two characters be four characters came about.
Mostly it came actually out of efficiency. I was trying to write a play very quickly all at once. And so I kind of settled into this world of, okay, how can I just, what's the simplest structure I can give myself? I'll just have two women start talking to each other. And then when I kind of was hit with the idea of, well, how do I now blow up the world? How do I expand it outwards? The idea of using the same actors through the piece, expand them outwards and have them play something else would be helpful. And in a short play like this, I felt like could be really a structural linchpin.
Okay, so where did the idea for, without getting in this, their conversation come from?
It came out of actually a weird riffing I did. I essentially knew that the play was going to begin with two old ladies, and I don't think this part's too spoilery, two old ladies talking about a dog at the gate. And something about that image just kind of really stuck with me as very ominous and kind of loaded with a lot of weird violence that wasn't explicit. And so I just kind of took that basic phrase and actually just had the two women start riffing on that to each other until I started to build the idea of what that meant and where that would go.
Now, Melanie, I know that through the DeathScribe process, the directors got to choose like their top two or three plays that they wanted to direct. What about Bad Things Happen Here caught your attention?
It really stood out to me because it kind of was the outlier. It didn't look on the page like any of the other pieces. It didn't really look to me like a radio play necessarily. It just felt completely different. It felt a little like something totally unique. And I think at first that was really terrifying because I thought, oh boy, I don't know what I would do with this. And then I kept coming back to it and thought, I don't know, actually there's something that is really, really attracting me to this. It's just, it's such a mood piece. And I think something Eric said, something I really liked is that the violence, it's sort of impending violence, but no spoilers. There's something very powerfully ominous about the whole piece, and I just really enjoyed that once I stopped being scared of it.
Yeah, without getting spoilery for people, there's a buildup of tension and expectation that you're kind of stuck with when that you're at the end. So your imagination is left to run on to figure out, okay, what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. And that's what appealed to me about it. You have this moment of uncertainty and then the story is over, but you keep thinking about it. You're playing the rest of the story on in your own head. And I kind of like that the path was set for us and then the path ends, but we can keep on going if we want.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so in your writing, Eric, do you do a lot of horror or just every now and then when the mood strikes?
It's not that I do a lot of horror, but the grotesque and themes of violence and power are huge recurring motifs in my work. Mm-hmm. And it tends to wind its way through even the more innocent works. So there's always moments of the plays that feel kind of off kilter and disturbing. And for me, it comes to back to a big obsession of mine, which is that how do you write about issues of violence, issues of power, without fetishizing them and without resorting to tropes that we have discovered are extremely pleasurable, especially in a piece like this where it's two women at the center of it? How do I not have essentially the pleasure of like impending doom against women? And how do I resist that kind of urge and yet still honestly talk about it? So those are the kinds of things that pop up often in my work.
Well, I like it when people take, it's going to sound cliche, but when they take horror seriously, because the, it seems to me, and this has been something I've complained about for the past, I'm going to say 15 years, the splatter and gore punk that horror movies have become is just so predictable and boring.
Uh-huh.
And it's not scary. It's not horror. It's not scary at all. And I'm going to be the old fart and say, get off my lawn. Give me back my old horror movie. So seeing something that's unique and brings back the necessity of applying your own psychological fears and your own imagination to what you're reading to bring the real horror into it, for me, was a delight. So thank you for that.
Happy to oblige.
I just wish I was in Chicago so I could see it performed, because I'm curious, without going into too much detail, Melanie, what sort of approach are you bringing to this performance?
Well, I really felt from the beginning that because Eric hadn't given me a lot of bones cracking and things like that, there that I didn't want to go towards, literal sound effects. I don't want to hear necessarily doors opening and Foley feet and things like that. That we can be a lot more impressionistic. We can be a lot more evocative. And so the instrument that, as I was just reading the script, the first thing that came to my mind was a waterphone. That classic horror sound that's kind of clangy and metallic, but also lyrical and very dissonant. And so we are in the process of trying to obtain a waterphone, which is not the easiest thing in the world because people don't just have them lying around. But in the absence of that, Joe Griffin, one of the sound designers, and I, we've been talking about what are other sounds we can make that can create that dissonant, that underlying tension. I hesitate to use the word underscoring, but that can help us. Using a bow on a bass, using a bow on a cymbal is something he sent me a sample of that sounds really cool. Ooh. Finding non-electronic, sort of analog, dissonant, but also sounds with stretch in them, and then finding moments where we let the silence do the talking, because I think that that's a really powerful, just even the way Eric has laid the play out on the page. There are moments where, like you say, we need to let the audience let their imagination fill in the gaps. So that's kind of the direction we're heading with it.
Excellent. So is this either of you, your first time participating in Death Scribe?
It's my first time completely.
And it's mine as well. And I am a Chicago resident, and so I'm sort of ashamed to say that, but I'm really, really excited. I've thought that what they do over at Wild Claw is just some of the coolest, most exciting work. So I'm really, really honored to be a part of it this year.
Eric, how did you find out about the competition?
Well, it's funny. Originally, it came from essentially a very random, look into like a submissions list, which is what playwrights do with their spare time as they figure out places to send plays. And this play was such its own weird little oddity. I was like, I have no idea when this is ever going to be used. And then this popped up and I was like, that's perfect. And then as it so happens, a friend of mine, I have a couple of friends who are based in Chicago. I am not. I'm based in New York. But a friend of mine mentioned that she actually was friends with people who run Wild Claw. And so as I mentioned this offhand to her in conversation, she said, oh, you have to submit it then. They're really, really fabulous. So that kind of pushed me forward to actually send the submission and not just put it on a list that I never dealt with.
And Melanie, how about you?
Yeah, I like I said, I've not ever worked with the company. I've worked with a lot of people in the company before, but part of my journey here is saying to them, you know, what are the expectations and what are we, you know, what are we looking to do here? And, you know, in some cases, the answer is win the bloody axe, which, okay, let's do that.
Everybody wants the bloody axe.
Absolutely.
Well, I wish both of you good luck in obtaining the bloody axe for this year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Eric, Melanie, their performance of Bad Things Happen Here will be in Death Scribe 2015 in Chicago at the main stage on December 7th. So if you're in the Chicago area and you're bored, please go see it. It sounds like fun, especially if you're the kind that prefers horror movies and horror entertainment for your Christmas season. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
You're home from the comic book store with your favorite titles. Wouldn't they read better while listening to Krypton Radio?
Hello and hi. Welcome back with more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guests for this segment are Joe Zettelmaier and Sarah Sevigny, the writer and director of another Death Scribe 2015 segment called Earwigs. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Joe wrote this story called Earwigs, and, you know, full disclosure, I'm not a bug person. So I was curious where this one was going to go, and it was intense and creepy and just satisfying on a, this would have made an awesome short film or short story. So congrats.
Thank you.
For sure.
That's lovely. Thank you guys both.
So where did this story originate from? Did you have like a nightmare about bugs or?
I can freely admit this one now. I wrote it the day before the submissions were due for Death Scribe.
Oh, no fair. Really?
Yep. I was waiting for some inspiration to hit, and I was mulling around some ideas, and I really wanted to go for something that I knew would provoke, like, a revulsion response, you know, the kind of thing that just makes you just kind of go, ugh, as soon as you think about it. And it was summer in Michigan, where I live, and I was brushing my teeth, and I looked down in my sink, and there was an earwig. Oh. And I had this immediate moment of like, oh, little mother, rah! And then I was like, oh, why don't I write something about earwigs, because they skeeve everybody out. And, you know, there's this great urban legend about earwigs and what, and I thought that would be fun to riff on, the idea of, you know, where does the legend end and the truth begin?
Well, you accomplished both the sense of dread, the building anticipation of what's going to happen next, because we can kind of guess, and the revulsion factor, bravo. The fact that you wrote it right before you submitted it, I'm so jealous.
You know, so I find that deadlines really help me.
Awesome. So, Sarah, I know the Death Scribe directors get to pick from a handful of their favorites. What item or what inspiration from Earwigs made you put it on your short list?
Well, it was actually my first choice. And the reason why was because it was the one that scared me the most. I mean, there was a lot of really good pieces that are going in this year, and I liked a lot of them, but It was just so super gross. I just put it down immediately and said, what do I need to do to be able to get this on? And that was the same kind of reaction that I had last year with Fracture Zone that Chris Walsh wrote. And it was the same kind of like immediate, this scares me, so that's what I want to do. And I was just lucky enough to get it. You know, I was very lucky to get it.
Well, you are the returning champion.
Yes, I am.
So you are
no pressure.
No pressure at all, but you are the current wielder of the bloody axe. Or the
director. Chris has the bloody axe.
Right,
yes, he's the writer.
Right, so he has the bloody axe, but you brought it to life in such a way. I'm going to say it helped.
It was a really fun experience, and he also allowed me to play with gender. It was originally written for two male actors, and I really wanted to have the two that I had, which was Corbett Pascoe and Noah Simon. And so I liked the way that they play off of each other, and Chris was really on board with changing that. And I think that helped as well. And, you know, the entire Foley team was just so on board with everything, and they all got involved, including the band. So I couldn't have been happier with everything that happened last year. And I'm super excited about what we're going to do this year. Oh, it's so good.
And I can imagine the Foley team having a great deal of fun with the sound effects in this one and just thinking about what the earwigs are doing is already making me squeamish. Just,
yeah,
Ellie is amazing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, Ellie is amazing. Right, you meet her first, and then you kind of go through the entire script, and you bring things to the table, and she's got things already ready that she's interested in. And then she was at our rehearsal two nights ago, and just to hear her with the actors kind of going through everything and running it, I was just dancing. Just dancing in my bed. It was awesome.
Well, one of the things I love about Ellie and the Foley team at Death Scribe is, like, they get the idea that they are as much a part of the performance as anything else. Like, the sound effects, the Foley art, it's not there to be background. It is it is fully a part of the performance.
It's a dance, really. You know, it's a dance between the actors and the Foley artists. And so the actors are not waiting for the Foley to be able, because you have to keep things moving and pushing through and pushing forward. But they are totally a symbiotic relationship between the two in order to make the scary, because you should be able to close your eyes, right? I mean, the point is that these are radio.
Yeah.
So even though we're seeing it live, you want to be scared out of your mind. And that's the word, the operative word is your mind, because it's your imagination. So to be able to close your eyes and hear them and hear all of the sounds and still be scared, that's the goal.
Amen.
Now, does having a live audience there watching too help with the feedback?
Sometimes, but you see, a lot of people can't see because it's standing room only. So you have like the whole upper echelon that are people just standing against the wall listening. So yes, I mean, absolutely, having a live audience there, because they're geeking out over all of the sounds and seeing them being made and seeing the Foley artists, you know, it's like they're in a competition, like a Olympics competition, because they have all their stuff there and they're like crouched down and ready to go. And it's all just, you know, so planned out to the second, right? So that's exciting, of course. But there are people who can't see that and who are still having just as much fun.
Awesome. So what, without getting spoilery, are there any plans for effects beyond just the audio? That's just to help the actors get into their performance.
There may be a music box sound. That kind of, it might bookend something.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
I haven't told him yet.
Oh.
So,
that
there, you know,
me.
I'm very happy. You know, just that total little tinny crank. Yeah, gross.
There's something about music boxes that just, ooh, shiver down my spine.
They really do. And so we're searching for something specific, and we'll see if it works out. Surprise!
Oh my goodness. Well, I wish. Like I said, I wish I could be in Chicago to experience these things live, but I will just have to wait, like everybody else, for the publication of the audio. And I'm sure.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm sure this one will scare me the most. I'm pretty sure.
I hope so. That's the goal. I want everybody to be super creeped out. But you see, here's the thing that I loved. I wanted to say one more thing about why I gravitated towards this one is because it's also pretty funny. There's a lot of comedy in it, especially between the relationship of Sarah and Amber. They are, you know, they complement each other really, really well. And you can see their love and you can see everything about their relationship by the way that they interact. And there's funny there. So I love stories that have that element so that when things start to go awry, it's kind of like a surprise.
Thank you. I'm a big fan of, I think comedy and horror are like chocolate and peanut butter. I think if you mix them right, it is just, I think it makes the horror scarier and the humor funnier.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, when I think about it, some of the funnier horror moments that I enjoyed the most were because the horror was not overwhelming the humor. The humor, they were like right there going hand in hand. I think that was part of the appeal of some of those old Tales of the Crypt shorts. They were just perfect.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Well, it's, human beings are funny creatures, and, it allows us to invest in them faster, and the more we invest, the more, we care when horrible, horrible things happen to them.
Yeah, because then it's from a place of truth. It's from a place of honesty. You know, it's not, like, fantastical. It could happen, which makes it even more horrifying. Yeah, it's horrifying. It's so super creepy.
Well, this one, I think you stand a very good chance at doing a repeat.
I'm knocking on wood. That would be awesome.
Not the wood! Not the wood!
Not the wood! Oh, God.
Oh, not the wood. Although, you are talking to a winner. He has won as well. Your piece, what is it, 2 years ago won?
3 years ago, yeah. Fish Story won the Bloody Axe Award as well, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I did not know that. They forget. They didn't leave. They didn't tell me that. Hey, well, let's hope for a twofer because, like I said, this one entirely creeped me out from the moment where,
I think I know the exact moment.
Yeah, I'm not going to, no spoilers, but like I said, as soon as this year's competition is released, I am going to send everybody to go take a listen. But
awesome.
Thank you for your time today, Joe and Sarah.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Again, if you happen to be in the Chicagoland area, December 7th, check out Death Scribe 2015 at the main stage. And who knows, if it's standing room only, maybe you'll have a better performance because you'll feel the people around you screaming too. But we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
Welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi as we continue our extended Death Scribe 2015 coverage. With me now is director Ellie Green, who is in charge of one of this year's Death Scribe short plays, radio plays. The one she has chosen to direct is Imaginary Fiend. Welcome to the show, Ellie.
Hi, well, thanks for having me.
Now, I've already read through Imaginary Fiend, and as we know, the Death Scribe directors get to pick, their top choices for pieces to direct. What attracted you to Imaginary Fiend?
I think I was really drawn to its sort of apparent simplicity. It feels like a really warm domestic story to begin with, and then it really pulls the rug from under you. So I was sort of attracted to the intimacy. I was really drawn to Imaginary Fiend because of the sort of the apparent simplicity of the play. It's a very small, domestic little play which is warm and sort of tricks you. So it pulls the rug right from under you and becomes something very different. So I was interested in working on a play where, yeah, there was that sort of intimate relationship between two characters that you saw explored. And I really love the humor of the piece, the way that Tim uses sound to sort of punctuate and to add like little touches of humor, the parakeet and so forth. So those were a couple of things that I really wanted to explore with this piece.
Now, not going into any spoilers, this piece actually uses a lot less ambient sound, background sound than some of the other pieces in this mm-hmm. year's competition. Was it more the just tight focus on the mother-daughter relationship that actually is two mother-daughters, a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter? Was it the focus on the relationships that really appealed to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't get to hear the voice of the grandmother, but there's a phone call made to her. I think that Tim's been really specific about where he wants the sound to be used and where he wants ambient sound to be used, although there is the opportunity for us to like flesh or detail it out if we wanted to. But I'm probably going to stick pretty closely to his guidelines on that. Yeah, I think that that there is a trajectory, a journey of sound in the play, again, which is similar to the emotional journey of the play. So it starts off with very small, like recognizable domestic sounds. And then obviously as the play, you know, gets into its later stages, when things get a bit stranger, then the sound follows. So I think he's done that deliberately. And yeah, there's also the opportunity for us to use music mm-hmm. that he's given us.
Okay.
So I'm excited to use the music as well.
Excellent. Yeah, the cozy, homey feel that it starts out with, and as it transitions into something just diametrically on the other side of the world from cozy home, the way he built that up in what I was reading, I really enjoyed that, because you have that, it doesn't just jump. It's a
right.
little slow turn, and then another slow turn, and then a big turn, and then a really big turn.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah, and it does give us, without sort of, giving you any spoilers, it does also give us, one of our actresses, quite an interesting challenge vocally that I
yes.
see what we can, you know, we'll see how we can use, I don't know, some microphones to enhance, but yeah, like I said, I don't want to music spoilers, but there's an interesting challenge for us there yeah. in terms of performance as well, which is great.
And that was a question. I was like, without going into any spoilers, were you going to do any modulation for that effect, or was your actress going to have to do that herself?
I'm hoping that we can get her some help on that. I think that would be the ideal, and you know, especially given, you know, the goals of Death Scribe. That's what we're going to try and do anyway. But like I say, we haven't started rehearsals yet, but I'm excited.
Well, excellent. I'm excited to hear the finished pieces once they're all put together. Once again, thank you for your time today. Good luck this year.
Thank you, Summer. Yeah, thank you so much.
Ella Green is the director. And now we're talking with Tim Griffin, the writer of Imaginary Fiend. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
Now, like I said, when I was talking with Ellie, I read the script. It's devious, and it's all the things I like in a horror. It starts out one way and then slowly twists and slowly turns to another way. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, actually, I came up with the title first. which is not how I usually work, but yeah, the title came up in my brain, and I thought, well, that's fun. And then, and so I started out with the conversation between the mom and the daughter, and I kind of wasn't exactly sure what the imaginary fiend was going to end up being. And then about halfway through the play, it sort of revealed itself to me. And so it was one of those interesting situations where instead of having, oh, here's an idea that I'm going to have for the story, I just, all I had was the title and I rolled from there. So
how many plays have you written?
Well, let's see. I'd say five, six full-length plays and a handful of short plays, one act.
Now, is this your first Death Scribe?
It is my first Death Scribe. It's the first Death Scribe I've been chosen for, yes.
But not your first submission?
No, I've submitted before, and I've attended a few times, and it's just so much fun. And so I'm really grateful to be involved in a larger capacity this time.
What is it about the Death Scribe format and performances that appeals to you the most?
Well, I'm a sucker for old-time radio, and I really, really have a great appreciation for live Foley. I think it adds... It's an exciting thing to show the audience how the tricks are done. It makes the experience more communal. Instead of trying to pull the wool over the audience's eyes, we welcome them in by showing them how the tricks work. And that way, it's more like telling a story around a campfire. But I think that what attracts me the most is the short-form storytelling. I think that horror especially benefits from short plays, short stories. I think that a good example of that is on The Twilight Zone, the first three seasons were half an hour episodes, and then in the fourth season they went to hour long episodes, and then in the fifth season they went back to half an hour episodes because I think they realized that it's hard to sustain the concept over that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that short horror fiction, it forces you to be very punchy and not wax rhapsodical about things that aren't relevant to the point of the piece. So and I think that it also has to do with one of my first exposure to horror as a kid was The Twilight Zone, and then I started voraciously devouring short story collections where, you know, guys like obviously Stephen King and Clive Barker, but also Ramsey Campbell and Steve Ramsey-Tem, and when Poppy Z. Bright showed up in the late 80s, early 90s. I just love the short form in horror, more so than I think the laboring over something for a couple hours. So...
Yeah, I'm a fan of the short horror form too, because it allows for a faster, more visceral connection, and then it's gone. But mm-hmm. it feels like a richer story at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's no nothing extraneous about it. There's nothing superfluous. It's you go back to your Strunk and White. It's you omit needless words, and when you're using short fiction is. You don't get off the path. You know, you don't wander over here to check out this. You're really focused on, and also you can be more visceral that way. And you're not, I guess you don't feel bound to fill pages because it can be as short as you like. It could be two pages long.
Mm-hmm. Now for what you've written, I'm trying to avoid spoilers here so people can enjoy the recordings when they get a chance to listen to them. Did you have any specific direction as far as background sounds or any kind of sounds, or are you just letting Ellie run with that entirely?
There's nothing I'm really, really married to, as far as the sound goes. You know, I've put in the necessaries, and I think that, you know, and yeah, I've got a music box in there, but it was sort of placeholder. I don't want to go for anything cliche, really. And I think that one of the things I like best about the way this piece turned out is that it doesn't rely on scary stuff. You know, you don't have to slather on the spooky. I think the one of the strengths of the piece is its simplicity. And that if you just approach these people as people, it's actually much more unnerving that way than ghouling it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, for one, am looking forward to hearing this one and all of the Death Scribe contestants, winners this year, performing some. Like I said, I've read all of the five scripts that are being performed, and they are all wonderful, delicious, and different.
Well, that's great to hear.
So thank you for your time today, Tim.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
And good luck in the Death Scribe. I know everybody's jonesing to be the winner of this year's Bloody Axe.
Yeah, I wish the event were tomorrow night. Can't wait.
So that's December 7th in Chicago, if you happen to be in town at the main stage. If you can get there, I highly recommend it. If not, we will have links to where you can listen to the finished products after they've been performed. At least I've been promised that I will.
Well, I hope so, because I want to hear them too.
Yeah, I know. But again, thank you for your time, Tim.
Oh, thank you, Summer.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Well, that will conclude our coverage of our massive Mondo wall-to-wall, almost everybody I could think of, coverage of Death Scribe 2015, the 8th Annual International Festival of Horror Radio Plays, presented to you by the Wildclaw Theater Company in Chicago. The complete details of where to go and when, it'll be Monday, December 7th at the main stage in Chicago. That's 1328 West Morse. Doors will open at 7 p.m. Performances start at 8 p.m. For more information on tickets and where you can buy them, go to www.wildclawtheatre.com. And if you're in Chicago and on December 7th, you're looking for something more interesting to do than your usual evening entertainment, go check it out, provided they haven't sold out by then. As soon as the recordings of those performances are published in podcast format, I will definitely have links to them. Because, like I said, I've read all the scripts for these five finalists. I want to hear them in all of their fully produced glory. And yes, one day I will get to Chicago in December, for crying out loud, and attend one of these performances myself in person. Seriously, December in Chicago, am I crazy? But thank you to Josh Zagorin, the artistic director for Wildclaw Theater, for helping arrange all those interviews. I really wanted to talk with all the writers, especially since one of them will win the Bloody Axe. I wanted to talk to all the directors to see what inspired them about the stories they had picked to direct, and I guess it warms my heart a little bit to find out that there are a lot of people out there who still enjoy the horror genre short form for what it can be. So again, thank you to everybody from Wildclaw Theater Company for putting this on every year. I enjoy it. And it sounds like the theater people in the Chicago area who have partaken in the past enjoy it greatly. So you're doing wonderful things. Keep it up. And I will do my part to send people your way, send horror fans your way. But that will do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. If you have questions or comments, call them in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can record a comment of your own and email that to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Leave a review for us on iTunes. It really does help. Let people know that we're still there. Slice of Sci-Fi is still producing content. We just had a little shift, but we're going to keep on going. It's like changing directions in an aircraft carrier. It takes a while to get pointed in that new direction, but you're going to keep going because you can't stop something with that much momentum behind it. At least that's what I like to think. Check us out on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Google+. And as always, come by the website, sliceofscifi.com. Yes, for those of you who got the full show, Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas is slowly ramping up. We needed to grease a lot more gears and parts than I thought, but we're getting there. There will be a show by the end of the year. I'm putting that out there now because if I give myself a deadline, I will actually tackle it head on. So that's my deadline. End of the year, new ninjas. Help me keep my promise. Thank you everyone for your donations and for those of you who've signed up for Patreon. The support is greatly appreciated and needed. We have a lot of hosting to pay for here. We have a lot of media hosting to pay for here. And right now I can't do it by myself. So your support is fully appreciated. Thank you very, very much to Sci-Fried for the theme music. You can find more music by them over at sci-friedband.com. And a special thanks to Tim Callender, my longtime cohort over at the Babylon Podcast, for providing the new Deep Space Spiral artwork that graces and adorns the podcast and the website. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for supporting, and thank you for telling your friends. And with that, we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.